In the beginning, God created time. We enjoyed it. Leisurely strolling through the garden, cherishing each precious second that was given. But then, we attempted to control it. But time kept moving like a relentless river. We couldn't stop to reflect or celebrate a past moment because a new moment continued to come. Each hour came with a burden of responsibilities that was too heavy to carry. We grasped to hold on to each tick of the clock, but they inevitably slipped through our fingers. We attempted to master it, strategically planning every second of our day until traffic came and ruined our best laid plans. So we gave up. Not being able to control it, we took out our phone and devoted our lives to the liturgy of the scroll, worshiping distraction over presence. In the end, we are constrained and ruled by time, becoming its slaves. In the beginning, God created time. Then we defiled it. But in Christ, the redemption of time has been initiated, and we can be set free from its tyranny. Good morning, my name is Bobby. I am the pastor of community life at Ross Road. And today we will be talking about time, a rather abstract thought, but in the same way that can still rule and control our lives. Children, when they are first able to use words, they ask, how much longer? When are we going to get there? And as adults, we order and schedule our lives. Confession, time can be an idol to me, where I want to take every minute of every day and be as efficient as possible. But as Tim Keller says, an idol can be a good thing that we give it an ultimate place, a place that is too high for itself. And I think often me and others can do the same. So we'll look at time, and the big idea today is that time is not a resource to exploit, but a sacred gift to share. Now, much of what I'm going to be talking about, should I just switch to that? Yeah. So much of what I'm going to talk today is reflections from myself from a book that John Swinton wrote called Becoming Friends of Time. So I'm going to reference him a couple times, invite you to look at that book later or ask questions about it. Now, often when we think about time, we don't really think about how we view time because our culture views time in a certain way. It's the water that we swim in. And it's so ingrained in us, we just think that this is the only way to view time. That becomes obviously not the only way to view time when you go to different cultures or when you go back in history and see how different people viewed time. So to start today, we're going to look at a quick history of time and look at the forces that shaped how we view time today. To start, I want to get you to imagine living 1,000 years ago, where you were in a one-room house with no electricity and no clock. The only way to tell the time is where the sun was in the sky and how your body felt. And as the seasons changed, you had to change as well. When the days became longer, your days became longer, and when they are shorter, they became shorter. Now, candles and lights were expensive for most of society throughout history, so when it got dark, there was nothing you could really do about it. You just went to sleep. And then you'd wake up when either the sun came up in the sky or your body felt rested. That might be the hardest part for some of you to imagine. There was no clocks or calendars that would run your lives. And you could never do all that you felt like you should, but you would just be present to whatever the moment had, the work that was in front of you. Now, does that sound nice? Maybe a little different than how we view time in all our culture, to milk every ounce of every second? Now, admittedly, this is an idealized picture of what the past was, and there's many limitations and constraints and hardships. But there is a difference in the amount of peace that people took. And part of that is because of some of the technologies that have come through history. So I'm going to go over three of those technologies. And the first technology that came was the mechanical clock. Now, this was invented in about the 1300s, and was invented by monks at a monastery. And they made it to order their lives around prayer. So 8 times a day, the clock would go off, and with whatever they were doing, they would stop what they're doing and be present to God. Because they wanted to order their lives around God. But soon after this, the clock went to the culture, and the culture went to economize the clock became profit-driven and to the economy, especially as the Industrial Revolution occurred. And at this point is when it first was said that time is money. You've probably heard that. And today we still talk about spending our time. How do you spend your time like it's a resource to be purchased? So at this point in time, when clocks became in everyday life, it was a way that people could pay for people's hours of their lives. And people's lives then became currency. Because if time is money and our lives are made of time, then we commodify ourselves and we commodify others. Another technology that came was electricity. And now we don't have to live by the amount of daylight or the orbit of our planet around the sun and how it spins and how much light is there. We can go into the wee hours of the morning trying to do more and more and more. We live by production, not by the rhythms of this earth. Our bodies crave sleep and rest. And the caffeine industry thanks us. Now, don't get me wrong, I appreciate having clocks and technology and all these things, but we want to be aware of how they are affecting us. And the third technology that we talk about is the internet, where now things have become easy, they become fast, and they've become controllable. But I'll tell you that almost every meaningful thing in life is slow, it's hard, and part of it is far out of our control. So we've tried to put these things down, even in the meals being coming to us in less than 20 minutes. We also, the internet has brought into an attention economy, where billions of dollars are spent on how to keep our attention, scrolling one more time, clicking one more news feed, paying attention to our phones more and more and more, so that we will look at one more advertisement, one more thing, and in doing so, we're just giving our lives, again, to the liturgy of the scroll. Now, this history causes us to view time in a specific way. And I'm going to use the illustration as we go on, as it is like an undertow of the ocean. the undertow being, if you go to the ocean where you're swimming, there's waves on top of the water and they're coming in, but what you don't realize and what you can't see is that there is a current that is going underneath the water and pulling in one direction. You may have been out swimming one day out in the ocean and you're out in the waves playing and then you look up a little while and you look to the shore and you go, wait, that's not my family, that's not my blanket, where are they? And you look far up on the beach and you see that you've drifted a lot more than you thought you could, a lot more than you thought you did. This is what happens as we view time with a cultural mindset. We drift without even realizing it. So I'm going to point out three of those cultural undertows that are happening, and then three biblical realities that we can stand firm on. The first cultural undertow is that time is scarce. Now, we all feel this, and I think it's poignant when you ask somebody, how was your week? And one of the most common answers is, busy. Like, that is the defining characteristic of our lives, is how full our schedule is, how limited we feel our time is. Now, information and technology have shown us how much of the world we haven't yet seen, experienced, and what everybody else seems to be doing. We desire it all, and we have a fear that we're going to miss out. You may have heard of FOMO, which is the fear of missing out, which is driving so much to doing so many things. And in doing so, we're not being present to what we're actually doing. We're thinking about what we're not doing. And in doing so, we find that we are comparing ourselves, and comparison is the thief of joy. A similar term is YOLO, being you only live once. Now, it's inviting people to enjoy the moment. But in doing so, it demands that we have no second wasted in our lives. We have to travel everywhere, watch every show, achieve everything, do everything. We need to habit stack our lives to wring out time and to control everything we can. And in doing so, we have an idolatry of more and more and more. The clock keeps ticking. Time keeps running. We never have enough. You find yourself actually feeling a little bit more anxious right now, thinking of all that? I don't have to tell you about how anxious our generation is. And one of the reasons is our view of time. The undertow is pulling us towards anxiety. But what's the biblical reality that we can stand on? That God is eternal and abundantly generous. Now, God is eternal, meaning he is outside time. He existed before time, and he will exist forever after time. Psalm 92 says that he's from everlasting and also going to everlasting. That means, when I said in the beginning God created time, he was before that, forever before that. And he will be forever after this world, whenever that happens, ceases to exist. We call this that God's transcendence. He is outside of time. But also, God is immanent. He made himself a character in our story, in our timeline of the world. That he is present with us right now. And that's important. Because we too are in time. And that's where lots of that feeling of being anxious and time being scarce, because we don't have infinite energy. We don't have infinite capabilities. We are in a body that needs sleep and food and rest. And so we can't do everything. We are finite creatures. But thankfully, God is abundantly generous. The beloved Psalm 23 talks about this right at the start. He says, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing, except time. Do you ever feel or say, I don't have enough time? The invitation of the shepherd here is to realize that we're not out of time. We don't lack time. Because we sometimes try to do more and more and more, and we put a pressure on ourselves to achieve more. Or maybe we think we have to do it all in our own capacity rather than trusting in the shepherd's capacity. He has come and gives us exactly the right amount of time we need. If you needed more, he'd give you more. Throughout Scripture, you see God as a provider who cares for us. That's not just for material needs. That's also for time. So time is not scarce. It's a gift. And because it's a gift, it's not something that we earn. None of you deserved or earned your birth in this world, and we can't earn another second of any day. And because of that, we can be at peace and grateful for whatever each moment we receive. Even if that means if this moment you get interrupted by your kids again, or you have to wait in traffic because you didn't earn it. It's a gift. We can be grateful. I mentioned the monks having the bells reorder their days around prayer and God, and it was a reminder to them that time is not their own, it's God's. Ronald Rollheiser talks about this and how most of us don't have 8 bells going off in our day, but he actually talks about parents have kids as monastic bells to remind you that time is not your own. You may not have young kids, but you have somebody who calls you from work. You have traffic to remind you. You have waiting and patience to remind you that time is not your own. It's God's. And therefore, we don't need to be anxious. We can be grateful because God is eternal and generous. The second cultural undertow I'm going to talk about is that significance is earned. Now, we probably wouldn't say this out loud, but it drives lots of what we do. The feeling that we need to prove ourselves and get lots of things done. When you come back from a day at work, you may feel like it was a successful day because you got lots done, and feeling defeated when you don't. Or maybe you feel this way when you get sick and you can't accomplish things and you still try to push through. Or as we get older and our health is diminished and we feel this more and more. Empty nesters can feel this when their kids leave and they feel like, okay, what do I do to prove myself now that I'm not with my kids anymore? Or when we're retired and step away from our jobs, where's our value? This all comes from our view on time, that what we our worth comes from what we produce. Because we will never gain worth on our own, because it's all through us. Relying on our own self-effort, relying on intellectual knowledge, or scheduling our days perfectly. It's like trying to keep 100 balls in the air. It will never happen. Solomon, who lived 3,000 years ago, he said this in Psalm 127. He said, "In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat." Do you ever feel that way? In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat. Now, it's a little bit comforting that he said this 3,000 years ago, and I still will struggle with this today. But that comes that as they are toiling for food, we're often not toiling for food to eat. It's vacations. It's the next phone. It's time off. It's whatever it is, and we're churning and running, especially mentally and spiritually, to try to accomplish things, trying to get that significance that we long for. We need to ask ourselves, what are we trying to accomplish with our busyness? What are we trying to accomplish with our busyness? Because the biblical reality that we can stand on is that Jesus accomplished all things. This is the gospel. This is the core message of Christianity, the good news that we don't have to earn anything. He accomplished it for us. And in doing so, invites us into his good kingdom of life and life to the full. In his death and resurrection, he has redeemed all things, including time. In my introduction, I quoted John Swinton at one point saying, "The redemption of time has been initiated." And later in his book, he says this: "If everything that has to be done has been done for us in Jesus, human beings have no real need to race along, trying to do everything on their own, in their own time, and by their own strength. We are freed to slow down and learn what it looks like to accept that everything that is important from the redemption of the world has actually been achieved and, paradoxically, continues to be achieved by, in, and through Jesus. If in Jesus the fullness of time is upon us, the Christian calling will be to live out of a different understanding of time and to learn how to dwell peaceably within God's time." Do you feel the burden being lifted? That it's not about you. Jesus has already accomplished it. You don't have to make it happen. One day he will do it in full. So we don't have to toil in vain to make it happen. And as Psalm 127 actually talks about, he grants sleep, he grants rest. He invites us to rest in what he's already done for us. So Jesus has accomplished all things. So we don't have to. Now, the third cultural undertow is commodifying people and idolizing tasks. Now, this is inevitable when we see time as money, when our lives become about producing and efficiency. Because when that happens, people are tools for us. They either help us to achieve what we feel like we want to achieve or to produce what we want to produce, or they get in our way. And so we have to get rid of them. People become a means to our end, whatever we want to achieve. Now, God created mankind in his image in love as innately valuable, not based on what they can produce or do or achieve. And therefore, we're called to treat others with sacrificial love. Now, this undertow is apparent especially for those who have disabilities or diminishing capabilities, because they require us to spend time, and therefore they may feel or they're seen as less valuable. They're burdens. Tragically, 50% of people who commit MAID or euthanasia cite that one of the reasons they're doing it is they don't want to be a burden to their family. And in saying this, they say, "I'm not as valuable as time golfing or working more." Our view on time is a violence to the innate dignity that God gives people. Which leads us to the biblical reality that we can stand on, and that time is meant for love. This comes from the nature of who God is as love itself. And he calls us to live likewise. Love always requires a sacrifice, doing something for someone else in some way that will cost us. And because we are embodied creatures who are finite and only have a limited amount of time, one of the greatest acts of love is to give our time. In fact, that's the ultimate goal of all of our time, is for love. It's not towards efficiency and getting the most and producing the most, because love is often awfully inefficient. It takes a lot of time. Whether that's as simple as listening to a kid's story that goes on and has no real meaning or point, but in doing so, giving them dignity by showing them that their story matters. Listening to them matters. The speed of love is painfully slow. Now, I do want to just nuance this and say that work and tasks are not inherently bad, but they all are to be done in an act of love, not production. John Swinton, in his book, says that frenetic disciples may get a lot of things done, but in doing a lot of things, they may miss the very things that God is doing. Jesus never rushed, even though he had a lot to do. He stopped to pray for kids or for a woman who was bleeding for years and just touched the robe in the middle of a crowd. Jesus always lived all of his time full of love. We can learn from him. So before we go to a case study on this, we talked about three cultural undertows and the biblical realities. And I invite you to think, which of these cultural undertows pulls at you the most? And what would it look like for you to live the biblical reality? So the cultural undertow of time is scarce. Do you see that in your life? How can you live according to the fact that God is eternal and abundantly generous? Or do you get pulled by the tow of significance is earned? How can you hold on to the anchor that is that Jesus accomplished all things? Or do you find yourself commodifying people and idolizing tasks? In doing so, how can you live in a way that your time is meant for love? Now we're going to look at a case study of Mary and Martha, and that's in Luke 10, 38 to 42. That's it. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better and will not be taken away from her." When I read this story, and maybe you have a similar reaction, is that you feel this kind of this pull on two sides. One side, I feel guilty because I know I fall into that Martha category really often. But the other time is there's part of me is an invitation to what Mary's doing. I think if I asked you to raise your hand on who you felt more like, many of us would say we're like Martha. And I believe that's partly because of the undertow that culture pulls us towards production, towards doing, towards getting things done. Now, I don't want to throw Martha under the bus here because she does some positive things. It starts by saying that she opened her home to Jesus. Now, likely, Martha and Mary lived in the home, but it doesn't say Mary and Martha opened her home. It was Martha that did the hosting. She was caring for Jesus, and often the New Testament in Jesus commends welcoming people and eating with people and being with people and doing things for people and serving with people. So she was doing some good things. She made it happen. But we see that she quickly gets a wrong posture. It says that she was distracted by all the preparations. And later Jesus says that she is worried and upset about many things. While she started with a hope to love Jesus and to host him in a welcoming way, it quickly turns and gets to a point where she is worried and distracted and gets consumed with all the details. Have you ever been there, getting consumed with all the details and maybe you're missing what's most important? I listened to an interview with someone who's named Will Gajera, who he ran the number one restaurant in the world. It was ranked first in the entire world. And he was asked a tip for people who are hosting others in their home. What is some advice for them, for the average person who's hosting? He didn't talk about how to elevate your food to a higher level. He didn't talk about the decorations or how to create the ambiance. What he said was, get out of the kitchen and be with the people who came to your home. They didn't come to your home for fantastic food. They came to your home to be with you. This is true for the top restaurant in the world, but also for our homes, for our workplaces, for our lives. Not to get distracted by many things, but to be present to what is most needed. You can imagine Martha going around brooding about what Mary was doing and what she was doing. She was maybe making a little bit extra noise to get her to notice or to walk in front, or maybe making arguments in her head about what she was going to say or how she was going to respond to her later. Or maybe that's just what I do, but that's what I picture her doing too. But as she does this, you see that she finally blurts out to Jesus, blurts out, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." Notice anything there? It's a little self-centered. It turned from being sacrificially loving to selfish. It became about her. And in doing so, she lost the point of what's needed. Now, she was serving around and she was doing good things, but it became to a hurried posture. Dallas Willard has a famous quote about the enemy of spiritual life is hurry. And another time he says, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your lives. But a less known quote of him goes like this. He says, being busy is mostly a condition of our outer world. It's having many things to do. Being hurried is a problem of the soul. It's being so preoccupied with myself and what myself has to do that I am no longer able to be fully present with God and fully present with you. In a way, Dallas is giving permission to be busy, because we all have busy seasons, whether it's a newborn baby or whether it's a work season. But in our busyness, that doesn't mean that we have to be hurried. And sometimes we need to cut out some busyness to make sure that we're not too hurried. Because as we're hurried, it brings damage to our own souls and miss many things. Because it was fine that Martha was busy. That's not what Jesus confronts. He confronts her attitude and her missing the main point. For myself, I noticed actually, ironically, as I was preparing this message, it being a busy season in my life. The end of school, dance recitals, work commitments, all these things added up. And I found myself getting frustrated and angry, even more critiquing other drivers especially, but probably in other areas of my life. And this is even in times when I wasn't even that, like, rushed for time. It just was a state of my soul. I missed being present. I'd love to tell you what I missed, but I don't know what I missed. I missed it. Maybe it was a good conversation with my kids. Maybe it was noticing the mountains or the sun or something else. But as we become hurried, we miss what is most needed, just like Martha. Now, there are times to get things done, like Martha, but we also need space and seasons to slow down. Like, can you picture Mary just sitting at Jesus' feet, enraptured by him? Time was not a commodity to her. You can even picture her just losing track of time altogether. It's especially radical because Mary was in the posture of sitting at Jesus' feet. And the only people who are supposed to sit at feet are disciples. And the only disciples were supposed to be men. Mary's posture was supposed to be in the kitchen with her sister, doing the dishes. Maybe she even knew that she'd get in trouble to sit at Jesus' feet, but she didn't care. She knew it was worth it. So she did it. Last year, I was gifted a sabbatical, and this passage was important to me to continue to remind myself that what times in my life I have to get things done like Martha, but during it, I could sit and just be with Jesus more, with whatever I'm doing. There was a season of kind of detox from the normal busy and hurriedness, and especially as I went home to seeing my three kids who also brought busy and hurry. But over time, the goal was not only to just sit at Jesus' feet when it's easy, but to grow in peace, even when I have a busy season in my life. Hebrews 4, 9 to 11 invites us to a sense of rest in our everyday life. It says, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For everyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest. We are invited to have this state of Sabbath rest throughout our lives. Not get swept by the undertow of culture, but to stand on the reality that God is eternal and generous, that Jesus has accomplished all things, and that time is meant for love. This might seem impossible for you to be like Mary because your schedule looks like Martha. But we need to reorient our lives, reorient our schedules, reorient our minds, because it's worth it. Like, who do you think had a better day that day, Mary or Martha? Martha stewing around, getting upset, or Mary just sitting at Jesus' feet? I've been inspired lately by hearing a couple people talk about the best part of their day is just time sitting with Jesus. That's possible for me, and it's possible for you. That will look different at different seasons. But whatever season you're in, we all need to slow down. Jesus did it. He prioritized it. Sometimes he had to go out early in the morning, waking up and going by himself. John Ortberg says that we need to arrange our lives to find contentment in everyday life. Our pursuit and our view on time usually takes contentment away. But we need to arrange our lives to find it. Or John Swinton says, we have become a people who think we have to fit God in rather than fit in what God is doing. We just came back from camping, and I pride myself on filling the back of my truck just perfectly, where I couldn't squeeze in another thing. I kind of think of that with my life sometimes, too. And after I've put in all these other things, being like, oh, where's God going to fit in to that? Where am I going to squeeze him in? And maybe there's a little bit here or a little bit there, or maybe just today I can't. Is that how we're viewing our time with God? Because if you're too busy to orient your time around God, you're too busy. You can say no to that so you can say yes to other things and to orient your life to be around him rather than living your life around the time of the clock. Now, this summer we're doing a series that's about living our values, and our values being over there, and as Andrew talked about being Christ-centered, one of them, and then the next couple months we're going to talk about being welcoming and in community. So I'm going to give four ways that we can practice living this kind of time, where we can embody it so that we aren't as pulled away, or maybe we just notice how we are being pulled away. The first three of these invitations to you is about how to be Christ-centered, and the last one is about how we can both be welcoming and community. So the first one, though, is to abide in silence with Jesus. Just be present with him. no distractions, no phone, even spending time without reading a chapter in your Bible. Often this is called solitude. Henry Nouwen says that without solitude, it is virtually impossible to live a spiritual life. Solitude is the furnace of transformation. Because solitude allows us to get out of the undertow of culture that is pulling us in a certain direction, we get to see where it's pulling us and just, most importantly, listen to God. Now, doing this, you will get distracted, but use that to just turn your attention to Him. Start with just 5 minutes with a time by yourself in quiet, and you can look at God who's looking at you in love. Even once a week, you can move to a larger chunk of time, maybe it's 30 minutes, just being present to Him, fighting against your body in the culture that is saying, go, 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 where the invitation is to be still and know that I am God. As the psalmist says, linking being still and knowing God, where if we are not still, I don't believe we can know God to the same depths. And as we can only be still because we know that God is who He says He is, and He'll take care of us. Second invitation is to dwell in scriptures, don't just finish chapters. Now, often when we get a Bible plan and a schedule and things, which I'm all for and is great, but sometimes that can just be another item on our checklist to get through in a day. And when that's our mindset, we just are trying to get it done as fast as possible so we can get to the next item on our checklist. The Bible is not an item on your checklist. It's an opportunity to connect with your Heavenly Father. Now, how would it look different if you just viewed your scripture reading from finishing it to dwelling with God? Maybe you'll slow down and reread a section a couple times. Maybe it'll turn into a prayer about what you're reading and knowing that you need God's help. Maybe it's going to be a question and a struggle, and you're going to kind of stew on it for a long time. So don't just finish chapters. Dwell in scriptures. Third invitation is to delight in something you enjoy with God. God has created an amazing world and given each of us passions and desires and things that we can enjoy. Hobbies are not a bad thing. Randy Friesen, in his book called SQ, was debating whether he should get a motorcycle or not. And he felt God say to him, get a motorcycle so that we can do it together. What are some things that you can just enjoy God? That you find it easy to enjoy God? Maybe even where you lose track of time. And how can you invite God into those things? Now, the fourth invitation, which again talks about welcoming in community, is give the radical gift of your presence. People long for presence. Slow, not fast, not efficient, not get this thing done, just to be with others. You see this especially with people who are going through difficult seasons of their life. Often people will ask, what can I do? What can I achieve? What check mark can I do to feel like I've done something for you? But people just long for others to be with them in their grief, in their mourning, in their sadness, in their struggles. Give the gift of your presence. It's inefficient, but just use your time to connect. That can be with somebody at work, going for lunch, asking a question, just listening and being with others. So out of these four, which one or two could you put into action this week to embody, to practice a different kind of time that is not being pulled by the cultural undertow, but you can live just as Mary did and dwell in that? Because maybe you yourself don't even feel like you're allowed to do this. You don't have permission to do it. And just like Mary didn't have permission to do it, she did it. And as your pastor, with the authority in me, I give you permission to slow down. Say no to something so that you can be with God. Because time is not a resource to exploit. but a sacred gift to share. Now, we've talked about a couple deep topics today, and it's going to take some time to digest, to think about this. If you have any questions, you can reach out to me and ask, or we can get a coffee together, and I'd love to talk about that. Because the culture will continually tell us that we need to produce. And I think it's even one of the clearest evangelistic methods, or maybe ways to evangelize, is by having a different view of time. As Saint Seraphim said, "Find inner peace, and 1,000 around you will be saved." Jesus invites us to a different view of life, not to earn it, not to earn, but to receive. Not to finish it ourselves, but he said, "It is finished." To close, I'm going to imagine, or invite you to imagine your life less hurried, where you can stop and breathe, both now and in your everyday life, rather than being swept away by the current, holding on to the biblical reality, being present to God and others. So we're going to have a moment of quiet where you can imagine your morning waking up in a different pace, being present, where driving isn't just from getting point A to B, but being looking outside, talking with those around you, where your work isn't a burden, but an opportunity to be a person of love, and to dwell in the love of God. Just take a moment to imagine what that life might look like for you. I just feel an overwhelming sense of God's desire to be with you. Not getting distracted by many things and what you feel like you have to achieve or get done, but to sit at his feet and enjoy one another. God, let it be so.